It's a Friday classic drive. It's a feast of St. Cecilia. It's Benjamin Britten's centenary. We're having an absolute ball on the show. So what better company could we ask for to top it all off than that of Luke Clancy and Culturefile?
This time on Culturefile, we're flicking through some further entries in the Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland with one of the new volume's editors, Harry White. And this time we look at the changing social status of the harp and how you make a book that tells you everything you need to know about both Gerald Barry and U2.
For the moment, or before the appearance of Emer, the presence of classical music or Irish serious music in the world is quite limited. Is there a reason for that other than the absence of an encyclopedia?
Oh, I'm quite certain there is a reason for that. I mean, there are a number of reasons for it. I think culturally, art music in Ireland, until very recently, has been submerged because of the country's political and indeed cultural complexion. There has been, if anything, a kind of a tentative quality surrounding the reception of formal composition in Ireland until very recently. One only has to think of a composer like Freddie May more or less giving up in despair in the mid-50s because of what he perceived to be a sort of a blank wall of indifference greeting the idea of contemporary music half a century ago. So I don't think Emer has got very much to do with that, but I do think that there's a great deal of music that was taking place and that might conceivably be called classical music or art music in an earlier period, certainly from the 17th and 18th century, and indeed well into the 19th century, that has just simply been eclipsed or obscured by a very different kind of reception history, which has tended to emphasise traditional music and popular music. In the 17th century, most of the examples that occur in Emer come from either church music associated with the Protestant Communion, or from music associated with Stuart courts and whatever remains of Gaelic culture after the flight of the Earls. Harp is a good instance of an instrument that has tended now to be regarded as a traditional instrument, but which in fact was very much a court instrument, an aristocratic instrument. And you know, as late as James I, the harp is still much admired in the neighbouring island, and Irish harpers are still regarded as aristocratic rather than as peasants, so to say. Exponents of musical culture. So that, of course, then changes with the plantation and with the incontrovertibly difficult condition of the country through the 17th and early 18th century. But after the Williamite Wars, similarly, there's a very strong sense of musical consolidation, particularly in the cities and above all in Dublin, where musical activity extends decisively beyond religious practice, and Dublin itself, through its theatre life, through its concert life, and indeed through its administrative organs, begins to cultivate a very, very interesting and very healthy musical practice. Which is why it's possible for a composer like Handel to come to Dublin in the early 1740s and give a work like Messiah, because the resources are finally there to allow that to happen. Now, it does tend to be the case that in the areas of traditional music and art music, a great deal more scholarly work has been done than is the case with popular music. And that's not just here in Ireland. I mean, that is generally the situation right across the Western Hemisphere, that despite the enormous presence and indeed, as I said, prestige of popular musical culture, there isn't a correlative depth of scholarship as yet that would match, you know, what's been going on with historical musicology and so on.
Is there a temptation to assume that maybe rock music or popular music doesn't require or doesn't reward the same kind of musical analysis as art music?
there is a difficulty that always obtains with popular music as to where the emphasis should lie. The challenge can be trying to apply an in-depth musical and analytic engagement to material that is actually crying out for a different kind of approach, and very often for a sociological or a cultural approach.
I'm thinking particularly of a very obvious entry on U2, mm. where there is almost nothing to say, or maybe there's something to say, but there's almost no time spent discussing what that sounds like or what that means in terms of the material of the music.
Yeah, and I mean, the U2 article is a very good place to examine where the difficulties lie or where the challenges lie. That article, in fact, is by Jerry Smith. And if you were to compare that with, for example, the article on Gerald Barry, which runs across 8 columns of 5 pages and has a significant bibliography and a meticulous work list attached to it, the difference in approaches is revealing, and partly the reason for that is that scholars of pop music tend not to have engaged or devised, as it were, a set of analytic tools which would, you know, allow you to recognise U2 in purely musical terms. And to be fair, until that happens, if it will ever happen in any domain of pop music, it's very unlikely that a work of reference in any country will reflect that kind of depth. People are sometimes tempted to jump to the conclusion that whereas, you know, the music of Gerald Barry is invariably more complex than the music of U2, that would account, as it were, for the disparity in approach between writing about one and the other. But that's not necessarily the case. I think popular music scholars will often concede this difficulty, that as yet, writing about popular music has not tended to involve the development of the kind of analysis that would be that would allow you to talk in exclusively musical terms about the works themselves.
I guess that was the first Messiah of the Year snuck in there. That was also Harry White, co-editor of the Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland, and we'll hear more from both Harry and his book when we encounter the contested status of Val Dunican next time on Culture File.